ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। तत्रापश्यत्स्थितं पार्थ पितृनत पितामहान् आचार्यां महतां भ्रातॄन् पुत्रं पौत्रं सखींस्तथा श्वशुरान् सुहृदश्चैव सेनयोरुभयोरपि। Translation: There Arjuna could see, within the midst of the armies of both parties, his fathers, grandfathers, teachers, maternal uncles, brothers, sons, grandsons, friends, and also his fathers-in-law, and well-wishers. Purport: On the battlefield, Arjuna could see all kinds of relatives. He could see persons like Bhurishrava, who were his father's contemporaries, grandfathers Bhishma and Somadatta, teachers like Dronacharya and Kripacharya, maternal uncles like Shalya and Shakuni, brothers like Duryodhana, sons like Lakshmana, friends like Ashvatthama, well-wishers like Kritavarma, etc. He could see also the armies, which contained many of his friends. Arjuna sees the armies on both sides, and he sees both in his brother's army, Yudhishthira's army, of which he is one of the two main fighters, Arjuna and Bhima. Bhima Arjuna Samayudhi. We find that Duryodhana has described that there are many fighters in my ranks who are equal to Bhima and Arjuna, because he described them, they were considered the best in Yudhishthira's army. But there weren't actually that many who were that good in Duryodhana's army. Some were better. Drona and Bhishma were better. Karna, maybe a little better than Arjuna. Duryodhana, more skilled than Bhim, but not as strong. And Ashvatthama, very powerful. So, like that. Shalya also was very powerful in the... Bhurishrava is mentioned. Bhagadatta, these are all some of them. Great fighters. So Arjuna saw them, and he saw many people who he had known and lived with throughout his life, including Duryodhana, who was the cause of all this big fight anyway, but he was still thinking of Duryodhana as his dear brother, although no one, after what Duryodhana had done to the Pandavas, no one would ever think of them as dear, but somehow he was still thinking like that. So there are many people. Here is mentioned Ashvatthama is a friend. Well, with friends like that, what do you need enemies for, as the saying goes? But they had grown up together in the Gurukul of Drona, Ashvatthama being the son, and Arjuna being more dear than Ashvatthama to Drona, more dear than his own son. So they'd grown up just like that, just like brothers, friends. So he's seeing many people who he knew, he loved, he'd lived with. They'd been people who had put his life into the matrix that it was in. Just like every person, who are you? A person is largely defined by other people. We may say that this person is a great leader of the nation, but if there are no people in the nation, then there's not much to say about it, is there? Just like I saw a map, Tibet. It's a large country. It's about more than one third the size of India. It's not a country because it got taken over by China. It's a huge landmass, but there's hardly anyone lives there. So there are a few countries like that. Kazakhstan, huge landmass, but not many people live there. So to be the Prime Minister of Britain is more than being the head of Tibet, because there are more people. There are other reasons also, but I'm just, in the newspapers, I was telling you, the sports came up. Well, folks, for all of you who know, it's a great event in the history of India today. It's today or yesterday, Sachin Tendulkar's 39th birthday. But for all, he's a great batsman, maybe the greatest in the history of the game. If there was no one to throw the damn ball, then there wouldn't be any meaning to him being a batsman. You have to have other people playing with you, right? And even he's a great batsman, if the other 10 in the side are all completely useless, then they wouldn't have won anything. So you can say he's a great batsman, but it requires other people also. You can't win with one man. So like that, great. We have here in this state of Tamil Nadu, Her Excellency, I forgot her name. Jayalalitha. Jayalalitha. Yeah. But what would she be if she didn't have any party to support her, or people to vote for her, or people to rule over? So however great a person may be, they have to have other people to be great in relationship to. And to compare them to. We say Sachin's a great cricketer. Well, you have to compare him to others. There's no one else. So we're all our lives are defined by others. Here is a person. Who are you? If you say, who are you, people will define themselves. You see, well, I'm married and this is my wife. These are my children. These are my parents. These are my neighbors. This is my boss. So what is my identity? We are defined by other people. So this idea of being like completely individualistic and make yourself a great success, I did it my way and all this kind of thing. But actually, it's much more sensible to recognize the fact that man is not an island, that we are all interdependent, and some people are greater than others. That's also there. That's not denied. The names of several fighters are listed in this first chapter of Bhagavad Gita. They're the greatest fighters, but there are many others also. And even the great fighters, they also, just like Arjuna, he needed a chariot driver. You need horses, what to speak of humans, you need horses also. You need someone to make the chariot, that However great a fighter you are, you need someone to make bows and arrows, and they should be good quality. Otherwise, you're a great archer, but if your bows and arrows are useless, you pick it up and it falls to pieces, then you shoot the arrow as straight as you can, but because it's not made properly, it just goes and hits you in the foot. Then you're going to lose the battle. The chariot has to be properly made. Even a chariot has to be serviced. Like cars, modern cars are very complex, especially if you have a Mercedes. Complex engine. It has to be regularly serviced, every part. But even the chariot, you have to see in the course of a day's battle, some parts might get damaged, and then that maybe has to be repaired at night before the next day. And on the battlefield, there had to be so many water carriers to bring water, and cooks, and then people to pull out all the dead bodies out. And so many things need to be done. There should have been so many doctors on the battlefield. So, however great you are, you require the help of others. We're all dependent. We're all interdependent. And that's why someone like Arjuna, he recognizes that and feels gratefulness even to persons who, or he feels some affection even to persons who really, by their behavior, they are not worthy of any affection. But Arjuna is seeing with a very broad-minded and open-hearted vision. Krishna says later in Bhagavad Gita, Vidya Vinaya Sampanne Brahmane Gavihasini Shuni Chaiva Shvabhake Cha Pandita Samadarshinaha. One who is actually learned sees equally someone who is very highly qualified spiritually, a very learned and humble Brahmin, he sees that person to be spiritually no more and no less than even the most wretched, rejected person in society, namely one who cooks and eats dog's meat. That's considered very low class. And what to speak of that, even the elephant, the cow, the dog, they're all seen equally as part and parcel of Krishna. Respect for all life. This was an essential point of Vedic culture, and actually in all cultures all over the world, respect for all life. You won't cut a tree unless there's really a need to do so. If some table has to be, a table has to be made, normally you wouldn't even make furniture. Tables generally not required. But if for some reason a temple, wooden doors have to be made, then first of all you have to take permission from the gods of the forest and the spirit of the tree, and then it's a whole ceremony. You just can't go and chop some tree down. That was observed until recently in India and all over the world, actually. Even in meat-eating cultures, the people would only kill the animals as much as they needed. There's a lot of talk these days about ecology and preservation of the environment. But the horrible exploitation of the earth and of the living creatures on earth could not be possible in a traditional culture. In Vedic culture or any other traditional culture, where people knew that we are living beings within the lap of Mother Nature, and we have no right to take more than we need from Mother Nature. That's stated right in the beginning of the Sri Ishopanishad, Ishavasyamid Idam Sarvam. What is that verse? Ishavasyamid Idam Sarvam? Yad Kincha Jagat Jagachang Jagachang Jagat Tena Chak Tena Bhunjita Magritha Kasya Swidhanam. Everything in this world is controlled by the Supreme Lord. So we are here as control living beings. So we have no right to take any more than we need for our body. There is jivo jivasya jivanam, that is there, that every living being lives at the cost of another. But there's no need to take more than is required for the maintenance of our body to unnecessarily exploit the earth and destroy this horrible civilization. Interestingly, some people have analyzed that this all came out of the misconception that arose in Christianity, where the idea that God gave man dominion over the earth. That means man can just do whatever he damn likes with it and kill every living being on it. So this idea that God gave man the earth to exploit didn't come, it wasn't there in what they call primitive cultures, but it came out of not Christ's teachings, but some demoniac misinterpretation of what's supposed to be a sacred text. Anyway, we see here that Arjuna, as a saintly person, well, yeah, we haven't come to that point yet, where he's seeing all the different persons. Now, one point is the main persons are being mentioned, and that's normal. Just like in a movie, they mention the main stars. There may be many players, many actors, but the main ones are mentioned. So, like that, in the drama that was unfolding at Kurukshetra, there were many, many millions of people present. Or several million people present, but the main persons are being mentioned. So that's natural, but actually there are many, many other, apart from all these big shots who are being mentioned here, there are many more who also died. Now Arjuna is lamenting that his friends will have to die, but what about all the others also? Of course, after the battle, Yudhishthira also lamented that so many people have died because of me. But for some insignificant chariot driver to die, then his own, in the battle there may be so many chariot drivers and foot soldiers and what do they call that? The unknown soldier. In the West they have statues to the unknown soldier. They have that in Russia also? No? Yeah. Means there are just so many people die, you don't even know who they are, what their names are. They're just a bunch of bodies all mangled up on the battlefield. Sometimes even the body isn't there, it's just been direct hit by a shell and there's nothing left. It's just some globs of flesh spewed here and there. So they have statues in Russia, and in England and in America, and to the unknown soldier, to people who died, and you don't even know who they are, what their name is, or just in the middle of a big battle, you just can't keep a track of all the people who are killed. Just so many. Stalingrad, people would come charging into the machine gun fire and just get mowed down, so many. So for the Although we're hearing about Arjuna and Purishravara and Bhagadatta and Ashwatthama, big soldiers, of course, Bhagadatta and Purishravara are not as well known as Arjuna and Drona. But for the chariot driver who was killed in the battle or who came back with, you know, half a leg missing and one eye missing and can't walk and can't talk properly for the rest of his life and just has to be maintained in that condition, for his family, it's very traumatic. We don't even hear about it. It's not possible. In the Mahabharata is such a big text, but it basically deals with the main incident. Of course, there are many before the story of the Pandavas, there are many, many other narrations also. But the central or best-known story is that of the Pandavas. But then again, it only deals with the main details of the very eventful lives of the five Pandavas. But there are so many other events which aren't recorded in their lives. And what to speak of all the other people around them? The war we're talking about, which is, it's often portrayed as something noble and heroic, and for kshatriyas, sukhina kshatriya partha labhante yudham idrisham. Kshatriyas become very happy when they get a chance to fight, because that's what they like. But actually, it's horrible for people who are, anyone who's not a kshatriya. We talk about it, but you know, if you see actually someone get their insides, just look at this picture of Hiranyakashipu. I mean, it's really horrific. Who wants to be Hiranyakashipu getting their stomach ripped out with lots of blood everywhere? Of course, all glories to Nrisimhadev. We're not going to have an anti-Nrisimhadev movement here. Like in Tamil Nadu, they had a pro-Ravana, anti-Rama movement. But it's actually horrific. That's why these kind of pastimes, they don't take place in the spiritual world. In the spiritual world, there's no ripping of Hiranyakashipu's guts out by Nrisimhadev, notwithstanding the posters which are in almost every ISKCON temple, showing in the spiritual world Nrisimhadev ripping Hiranyakashipu to pieces. But despite the artistic imagination of a modern devotee, Nrisimhadev doesn't rip anyone to pieces in the spiritual world. There's no such thing going on in the spiritual world. So in this material world, there's these ghastly activities, bhibhatsa rasa, ghastly rasa, and bhayanaka rasa, fear. The rasa of fear. So, actually, this is all very horrible, and it causes. I mean, the war at the time, the kshatriyas, they feel that spirit, like, you know, they like to fight, which is, after all, in the Supreme Lord himself. He also likes to fight. Where does this spirit come from? It comes from the Supreme Lord. But in this material world, it creates a lot of suffering. Of course, we're not saying shouldn't be done, because we find here that Krishna incited Arjuna, who didn't want to fight, for what appeared to be very good reasons. Krishna incited him to Arjuna to fight. Krishna didn't actually, all the reasons that Arjuna gave for not fighting, Krishna didn't actually refute them. He didn't say that what he said is wrong. But Krishna just came from a completely different perspective altogether. So it is a fact that this killing, maiming, it is something very horrible. And people suffer. I mean, if your father goes to war and he never comes back, he's killed there. Maybe even worse is that there's no news. You just don't know. He just vanishes. You don't know whether he's alive or dead. That means he's probably got crushed under some chariot and his body is so mangled and no one saw or remembered him being killed, but he just didn't come back. And so you don't know, you're kind of waiting, well, maybe he'll come, maybe he won't come, and then you just kind of lose hope and then you presume he's dead. But undoubtedly, apart from the physical suffering, which kshatriyas can bear, but there's also the emotional suffering. Of course, people may be proud of their my father died fighting for the nation, or fighting for Yudhishthira, or whatever. Or that he just died in a battle, whoever he was fighting for a kshatriya, that's considered something glorious. But just as Arjuna, he is feeling that in this, you know, this battle, so many people are going to get killed, and then where's the happiness? If there's for all the we want the kingdom, but there's the kingdom, and there's everyone's dead. Then what's the fun in having a kingdom? So it is suffering. It causes great suffering. Yeah, but it is required also because. Although war is something horrible, in some cases, if you don't have a war, the result is going to be worse, which is the reason given for America and some other countries at the present time who are openly talking about attacking Iran. Now, why should they do that? You know, that people are sitting in Iran eating whatever they eat. I don't know what the staple food is over there. And all of a sudden, Uncle Sam sends you a present of a bomb on your head and blows you to pieces. Uncle Sam means America, by the way, for those of you who in India you don't know all this important things. So, the reasoning is given, and it is, I guess you could say it's debatable, but at least on face value it seems like a valid argument, that Iran is developing nuclear technology, and it's highly suspected that once they get it, they're going to bomb Israel, and just, you know, nuclear pulverize Tel Aviv into that was Tel Aviv, ex-Tel Aviv. There's no, it'll just completely destroy the whole place. I guess they won't do it to Jerusalem because that's also an Islamic holy place. But so, it's, of course, I don't know all the underlying politics, but the logic is that, well, it's better to strike them first before they kill some people, no doubt, that's unavoidable. But what about all the other? If you don't do that, then they're going to kill a lot more people. So, these are some of the considerations. It's very complex, isn't it? How we are bound up in this net of relationships in this material world. One thing is, we can see that this material world, it's not nice. Arjuna, he couldn't imagine how he got him. How did this happen? Arjuna had been such a good man throughout his life. He was strictly following dharma. He was a great devotee of Krishna. How did he get in this situation? He'd never wanted anything bad to happen to anyone. Even in this situation where Duryodhana and company had so severely mistreated Arjuna and his brothers throughout their life, but still Arjuna doesn't want anything. He doesn't feel bad toward Duryodhana. But he just, how did I get in this situation where it's a no-win situation? Stephen Covey is famous for his win-win. But there's no win in this situation. Duryodhana is not going to back down. And there's no way, but you have to fight. And so many people are going to get killed. And there's no way out of it. So Arjuna is just wondering, how did I get in this situation? But that is the nature of this material world. Samsara davana. Samsara davanala. It's the forest fire of material existence. You may say, well, Arjuna's a devotee. But yeah, he's a devotee. But he's in the material world, and that's the nature of the material world. And Krishna doesn't make an arrangement in the material world where the devotees, they just live completely cut off from all the conditions. The same conditions apply. But the character of the devotees is shown in as much as how they react to the difficult situation. The same difficult situation is there for the devotee as for the non-devotee, maybe even more so. We don't find any non-devotee who was treated as badly as Prahlad was. But Krishna, he demonstrates the character of his devotees by how they live throughout all these difficult situations. He glorifies his devotees. Who would have known how great a devotee Prahlad was if Hiranyakashipu hadn't tortured him? Who would have known? And many people who will, they'll sing Jai Ram, Jai Ram, Jai Ram, or Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, but that's nice, that's good. But how much we have devotion, that will be tested more in adversity. How much we stick to Krishna, despite everything. The Pandavas, they never considered to renege on their commitment to Krishna, despite it might seem that Krishna is all powerful, then why did Krishna allow the Pandavas to go through so many difficulties? The Pandavas never thought that. They thought, well, Krishna, he's the Supreme Lord. It says, whatever his wish, we have to live according to that. They wanted Krishna's friendship. They never asked him to make some special arrangement for them, just like Prabhupada sometimes said that Krishna never said to Arjuna, look, I'm the Supreme Lord, you're my devotee, you just go to sleep on this chariot and I will do everything for you. Krishna never said anything like that. Krishna said, Mam anusmara yudhyacha. You think of me and fight also. He didn't give Arjuna an easy way out. Arjuna wanted an easy way out. That, look, this is too much, it's really too much. You put me through so many things throughout life, but this is too much, and I think I'm well justified in not fighting. And he gave so many reasons. And Krishna said, you're just a damn fool. You don't have any good reason. Look, I want you to fight. Fight. You're my devotee? Fight. You want to be my devotee? You have to do what I want. That's what it comes down to. You have to surrender. You don't like to fight? I want you to fight. Now you choose what to do. So Arjuna, he agreed to fight. He didn't want to fight. Krishna wanted him to fight. That's the meaning of surrender. We don't expect to be tested in such a way. We find that actually that question came up about human sacrifice in that Christian. But we find in the Bible, that's the famous story, that God required Abraham to sacrifice his first son in a sacrifice. So that was the test for Abraham. He was supposed to sacrifice his son to God. So it's a great test. course, Krishna had a reason. It wasn't just unreasonable. But by putting Arjuna through so many difficulties, he showed the character of Arjuna. Okay, there, that's a few points there, just rambling here and there, no particular one point out of all those things I said, but if anyone has any questions about that, you can ask about it. Yeah. Our determination will be tested in difficulty. Yeah. We should always expect there will be difficulties. It's a very good policy to always expect difficulties. You know why? Because they're always going to come. That is the nature of the material world. It is maya durashaye bahirata manina to always expect that that life will be good. Everything will be nice. That is maya, to think that everything will be good, because it is the nature of this world that there are always difficulties. And even if life seems very nice for some time, it's just maya setting us up to think that it's nice, just to get ready to smash us more. That's all. Just like the cat catches the mouse and lets the mouse run and play, and the mouse thinks, oh, this is very nice. Actually, the cat is very nice. The cat caught me, but let me go. And now I'm free, and everything is very nice. And the mouse has gone a long way from the cat and thinks, you see, now the cat can't even catch me. And then the cat just jumps and catches the mouse again. So it's a very good policy to expect that there will always be difficulties, because there will always be difficulties. And to think that there won't be difficulties is just the action or our being in illusion, that's all. Janma mrityu jaravyadhi dukkha dosha anudashanam. Who can avoid? Who can avoid the miseries of birth, death, old age and disease? But you'll have this experience if you speak with people and tell, this world is miserable. They'll start protesting. No, 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 no. But actually there is birth, death, all that. But no, no, it's not miserable. It's nice. This world is nice. Oh, birth, death, but what about birth, death, old age and disease? Well, you know, that's natural. You can't avoid it. But why concentrate on that? Why not concentrate on the good things, people will say. Concentrate on the good things? My dear sir, you have to suffer birth, death, old age and disease again and again and again. What good thing? What is this idea? Good thing. The other day I just thought about some of the diseases I'd been through in this lifetime. It's just like a long list. And afterward I thought I left a lot of them out also. And every single one of them is miserable. Diseases or accidents, some are very painful, some things are like nauseous, in some cases you're like completely weak, and then there's just all kinds of them. Who can avoid? It's just realistic to see this world as miserable. So what was your question? Should we expect difficulty? Of course. Therefore, we should study Shastra. This modern materialistic civilization is so bogus. They have the idea, you work hard, get money, then have a nice life, and then you see everything's good and everything's nice. Just completely bogus. The idea that you'll be happy by having money and sense gratification, just bogus. Who's happy? But they create this illusion, you see. Work hard, get money, enjoy sense gratification, then you'll be more happy. But it's not true at all. You just came from Sri Lanka, is it? You came to Chennai. Now here in Chennai, people in general are much more sophisticated than in Sri Lanka. They have more money. There's so much more technology. In many places in Sri Lanka, there's internet people never even heard of. And computers you won't see even in many places. And what do you think? Overall, people are more happy in Sri Lanka or here? Obvious. The more technology and so-called progress you have, the more people are in anxiety, the more impersonal they are, the more crime there is everywhere. The more complex society is. Of course, Sri Lanka just came out of a 30-year war. But even then, that war was, of course, that was made by politicians, as usual. But even then, in general, people's general outlook on life, they're much more peaceful within themselves than people who are striving for sense gratification. They're what? They're not beggars. Yeah, everyone has food. Because they grow their own food. But now they're getting sucked into the world economy, which means just like in so many people in India, they have cell phones, but they can't afford to eat or feed their families properly. The government gives them a free TV here in Tamil Nadu, so that was the previous chief minister's policy, so that they could all watch his TV station and be indoctrinated by his propaganda. So they all have TVs, but no food, not enough food. Yeah, it's insane. Insanity. So, we're distributing Srila Prabhupada's books, and we're supposed to set up Varnashram farm communities. You all know this, I hope, as followers of Srila Prabhupada. Prabhupada said book distribution and farms, these are our solid programs to give people the proper understanding of what is the meaning of life and practically demonstrate how it should be lived in Krishna consciousness. So we're opening a temple opening will be there in 2 days, Krishna willing. So that's nice. That's good. Should be after all these years in Chennai. But actually, Prabhupada was emphasizing more Varnashram communities, practical, how people can live happily in Krishna consciousness. Seeing as there's no killing of demons in the spiritual world, or demons, as we say. How to understand the statement in Chaitanya Charitamrita, Madhya Lila, chapter 20, text 397.
That if you tell the pastimes of Krishna and continue to take it place in the original Guru's Vrindavan planet, and that in the purpose of Krishna to explain how Krishna's pastimes are eternally going on and in the real world in those places, after this meaning of Krishna is manifested in the original Guru, it is the next 26.
Yeah, the killing of Putana is going on in the material world. There's no killing of Putana in the spiritual world. There are different. There's the Bhoma Lila, which means the pastimes of the Lord in the material world, which they're somewhat different to those in the spiritual world. It's said in the spiritual world, Prabhupada writes that there are rumors of demons. There are no actual demons, but there are rumors of demons. Like they're afraid Kamsa's over there somewhere, but he's not really there. Yeah, what did it say? All the pastimes of Krishna existing originally in Golok Vrindavan and in Bhoma Vrindavan. Yeah, like that. But there's no actual killing of demons. Prabhupada says there are rumors of demons. But if you want your real hardcore demons, you have to come to So the material world is there. For the material world is there for those foolish jivas like ourselves, unless there are any undercover nitya siddhas here, who are forgetful of Krishna. And there are also certain pastimes which Krishna can enact in the material world, which are not in the spiritual world. Some statements are general, you see. We have to balance different statements. That's called Shastra Yukti. We have to harmonize different statements which may appear to be contradictory. When there are adversities or difficulties, we should think it's an arrangement of the Lord to purify us. We can think like that. We can also think that anadi karma phale paribhavarnava jale, that according to my, I'm getting this because of my sinful activities. So I'm suffering because of some sin or some offense I made. And we can also say that, yes, Krishna's arranging this for my purification. So there are two different ways to look at it. Actually, the same thing. We can think that Krishna's arranging this for my purification. Actually, I should suffer much more because I'm so much more sinful. But Krishna is just giving a little taste of what I deserve much more. That's how a devotee thinks. That's very different to the attitude, isn't it? That, well, how can I believe in God? If there was a God, he would come and massage my feet every night. Why am I suffering? Pray to God to remove your suffering. That's a materialistic outlook. You want God to serve you. But a devotee thinks, let there be more suffering if Krishna wills it. Thy will, not mine, be done, said the good Lord Jesus, so we are told, in his addressing God. But actually, for a pure devotee, there's no question of thy will, not mine, be done. It's, my will is whatever you want. He doesn't have a separate agenda at all. Yeah. Arjuna is a Kshatriya and it's his nature to fight, yeah. How can we apply the instruction of Krishna to our life? Well, we can't because we're not Kshatriyas. Yeah, but then we have to apply it to our own psychophysical condition and then do what we're doing for Krishna. That's been understood. In India, people have understood this about Bhagavad Gita since time immemorial, that it's not a call for everyone to fight. Whereas in the West, it's been misunderstood practically from the beginning that it's a book encouraging violence, wanton violence, but it's never been misunderstood in that way in India. That it's just encouraging everyone to fight, not at all. That everyone should perform. Svei svei dharmanyabhirata sanghitim labhate naraha. That one should work according to one's own type of work, and in this way one can achieve perfection. Svakarmana tamabhyacha siddhim vindati manavaha. By performing one's own particular work and worshipping the Supreme Lord, one can attain perfection. Yeah. Is one purified of one's sins? Yes, But this has to be understood very carefully, because I have discussed this, it's a big question actually, but Diksha doesn't just mean sitting in a ceremony. It's divyam jnanam yato dadyat purvat papasya sankshayam tasma dikshati sa protas deshikais tatva kovidaha. Diksha is the process by which spiritual knowledge is conveyed and previously committed sins are destroyed. So it's a process. It's not just diksha. Of course, it does mean, well, traditionally diksha, the essence of diksha is understood to be mantropadesham, or to be given a mantra, specific mantra, with an explanation of what that mantra is. But this definition, which is generally given, which I just quoted, means the process by which spiritual knowledge is imparted and one becomes free from sins. So to think that I just by being in a ceremony, I'm free from all sins is a misunderstanding. It's a big discussion, actually. Diksha kale bhakta kare atta samarpan, shekale krishna tare kare atta sham. According to this definition, diksha means that one surrenders oneself. And then Krishna makes it that person one of his own. So, yeah, diksha means surrender also.